This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm David Gale and welcome to The Informer. Tonight I'm joined by Paul McClure. On the 1st of September, last Thursday, the Adoption Amendment Act 2015 came into effect. This means that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex couples can now adopt and apply to adopt in Victoria under the same circumstances as any other couple. Felicity Marlowe from the Rainbow Families Council joins us tonight on The Informer to tell us about what these changes mean and the work that still needs to be done. Also, Ro Allen, Victoria's Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, gives us her take on same-sex surrogacy adoptions. Later, Senior Constable Janie Lambert talks to us about the recent spike in motorcycle fatalities, and Joe Bangles, President of the Dykes on Bikes, tells us why we should sling a leg over and get on a motorbike. On September the 1st, 2016, the Adoption Amendment, Adoption by Same-Sex Couples Act 2015, came into effect. It means lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex couples can adopt under the same circumstances as any other couple. The paramount consideration of the courts in considering adoption applications remains the best interests of the child to be adopted. Tonight on The Informer, we're joined by Felicity Marlowe, co-convener of the Rainbow Families Council. Welcome, Felicity.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. Look, tell us what these new laws mean, or this new act and this new law means.
Well, it's a pretty startling and amazing victory for advocates around parenting reform in Victoria. It's taken 12 years, but we're finally there. It will mean that same-sex couples can finally apply to adopt either their own children or infants in the same conditions and under the same conditions as heterosexual couples have been able to. So it's a really big win, but it is a bit of a bittersweet victory too. There's a few things we're not so happy about.
More about that in a moment. But does that mean parents were in limbo beforehand?
The situation was a bit odd, really. So in circumstances, say, where there was a newly formed family where there was only one legal parent and that parent got a new partner but there was already a child involved, that just meant that second parent didn't have any legal responsibilities or rights to support that child in that relationship. Technically, that's called a step-parent arrangement. So the law now means, as of Thursday, that step-parent can now apply to adopt the child that they have been caring for. The second really big significant issue is, as your listeners would know, foster care agencies are always asking the LGBTI community to step up and look after some of our most vulnerable children in Victoria and be foster carers. And so many of us have over the many decades that's been an option. But once those children are then moved into permanent care, so in more permanent situations with that same-sex couple, prior to last Thursday, if the natural parent relinquished those children or they became a ward of the state, there was absolutely no guarantee that that child could stay or be adopted by that same-sex couple. Maybe one of them as a single person, but even that was a bit up in the air.
Yeah.
So that's now meant for all of those thousands, hundreds of children who are in those permanent care arrangements with same-sex couples, should they be able to be adopted, that same-sex couple can now apply, which is going to make a huge difference to that legal certainty for those kids.
Yeah, and that's interesting because when I can think about adoption, I think of infants. But you have obviously raised just then the older children who, as you say, have been in a foster care arrangement. That's brilliant news for them.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, infant adoption is one of those things that really is being phased out across the board anyway, in that it's much more seen as foster care provides that sort of connection with your natural biological parent. So in the, you know, olden days, children were taken away from their single mothers or immediately, if they're born out of wedlock, taken away and adopted out, and people didn't, there was, you know, it was a very painful time for a lot of families and those mothers involved as well. Infant adoption is much rarer now. There'd be less than a dozen a year in Victoria alone.
Okay.
But now it just means that same-sex couples can put their name up, go to an adoption and permanent care agency and say, we want to apply on the same basis as everybody else, and they will therefore be considered at the same basis as everybody else.
If, for instance, a foster child is to be adopted by a same-sex couple, they do still obviously have parents that are somewhere else doing other things, and that's why they've been placed in foster care. Legally, how many parents can a child have?
So that's sort of two quite good questions. Yeah. So I probably didn't make it as clear as I could have, that only in a situation where the biological or natural parent or parents relinquishes, or they may unfortunately die or might have their parentage rights taken from them by the state, would a child become up for adoption? So that is the only time that a child on permanent care would actually be allowed to be adopted. You could never have more than two legal parents. So that is one of the anomalies of the law that we think hasn't caught up with our rainbow families, is that they come in all different shapes and sizes, and sometimes that means we have two, three, four adults who take on a parenting and caring responsibility, and the law really still has not caught up with that reality.
Now, you mentioned before about a bittersweet victory. Can you go into that a little bit more in relation to this law?
Absolutely. So as many of your listeners will know, we have a very high proportion of particularly gay men as dads who've created their families through overseas surrogacy. And while this is not really an explanation on the sort of whys, wherefores, or sort of morals or ethics around commercial surrogacy, the fact remains that there are hundreds of children who live in Victoria in these wonderful gay dad parent families who have done since birth, who are loved and nurtured and wanted, but they are not provided the same legal certainty as their cousins or siblings or other friends at playgroup, for example. Yeah. And that's because there is no process that recognises their parentage when they come back into Australia and creates a sort of limbo just for that set of kids. So when we were like negotiating around who are the sort of kids that would be captured by adoption, we really hoped that these hundreds of kids with their gay dads would be captured by it and would be covered and given that legal certainty. But unfortunately, the Adoption Act has failed to deliver on that point, and we are very, very upset. We've expressed that disappointment directly to Minister Foley, and also in correspondence to Minister Foley and Minister Makakos, who's responsible for children and families. We've met with the International Adoption Victoria Agency that's part of DHHS to say that we don't believe that there is a process under adoption that is going to be sufficient, and we are hopeful that we can continue to negotiate with the government to make sure these children don't continue to live in some sort of legal limbo.
And that's important. I mean, obviously, the legislation is never set in stone. There's the chance to have it amended down the track, and obviously you're going to continue to work towards that to encompass those gay dads and their kids.
Absolutely. Adoption may not be the answer for all of these children that live with their gay dads and who have been born through international surrogacy, but we truly believe that the government made an intention towards rectifying that legal problem. They failed to deliver on that with the Adoption Same-Sex Amendment Act that came into effect on September the 1st. So we think that if the Premier and the Minister continue to stand up and say equality is not negotiable, then they have to realise that they can't then say, no, but sometimes it's a bit negotiable for children whose circumstances of their birth are a little bit too tricky for us to manage.
Because otherwise people will have to go to the family court, or there'll have to be some sort of test case, a precedent, and that would be quite costly. Well, you know, I mean, somebody's going to go ahead with it, but we just need some legislation, maybe just some slight...
It could just be regulations or procedure. We already have a situation in Victoria through the county court to acknowledge parentage for altruistic surrogacy, which came in January the 1st, 2010, which gay men and lesbian couples can, you know, participate in. We think something like that acknowledges the documentation provided from the overseas countries where the children have been conceived and born, plus potentially a few other sort of checks and balances, would be sufficient. We can't understand why it's taken from the time the Act came in on the 9th of December 2015 up until last Thursday when it was set to commence that no action has been taken to rectify this pickle, really, that these children and families are in. So we're really disappointed, but we are quite hopeful that we would continue to work. But as you say, Is the family court an answer? Not really. It's seen as a place of dispute. You can get a parenting order, but that expires at the age of 18. Yeah. People don't want that to happen. They want to have enduring parentage
with
these children. That's right. We had kind of stumbled across adoption as a possibility, but if it's not correct for the children who are born through overseas surrogacy, then the government, it's beholden upon the government to find another process.
This act has just removed the last sort of bastion of discrimination in adoption, except there is a little area that's sort of a bit grey as well. I mean, it's to do with faith-based services being able to discriminate against same-sex couples that want to adopt.
And I think the issue of religious exemptions is a bit of a thorn in the side of any equality
LGBTI community
can ever enjoy, because it comes up with, you know, whether you want to book a holiday place for a same-sex attracted trans youth group, you know, whether you want to be employed in a particular school or education setting. And in this situation, the Catholic Church fought quite hard to say we do not want the religious exemption to be removed, the one that says we can refuse to deliver services to same-sex couples. So unfortunately, out of the 11 tendered adoption and permanent care services that this government allows to deliver those services, that exemption still exists, and the one religious faith-based organisation is Catholic Care. So I would, you know, warn people not to approach them and ask to apply to adopt, because what they will do is just refer you somewhere else, and that could be quite difficult and painful.
Yeah.
That's right. So Anglicare, Uniting Care, these places have all said, when we measure the best interest of the rights of the child as the most paramount thing to consider, we don't think the gender and sexuality of who the prospective adoptive parents are matters at all.
So if you were to ask the government for anything just to be changed in this act, it would be those two things.
There are a number of other inconsistencies with the Adoption Act, and in fact the Victorian Law Reform Commission are currently looking at all of those. They're doing a modernisation review. People can go onto the Victorian Law Reform Commission website and look under their Adoption Act modernisation review, and submissions are due on the 16th. It kind of captures all the things that they didn't address with our Same-Sex Adoption Act, but also different things like adoption and changes to birth certificates, cohabitation requirements, suitability requirements. There's still a lot of outdated, outmoded, overdue changes that need to be made to the existing Adoption Act, even with our lovely amendment for same-sex couples. So we do urge people to talk to the Law Reform Commission if you think things like whether you've got a mental health issue, or if you happen to be a person with a disability, should be whether or not that should be held against you as an eligibility criteria, or, for example, whether you're a single person, why should it only be that couples get privileged for things like adoption? So we've had a consultation on behalf of the LGBTI community and Rainbow Families with them specifically on all of these sort of issues. But if anyone has other matters I think should be raised, please do either contact us or contact the Law Reform Commission.
Sure. Now, it's been a long journey to get this far. Next Tuesday, something's happening as well, and I think we're going to try and
nice
catch
segue
up with you. Well, you know, it's only a week away. It's a long journey, and it is only a week away. But next Tuesday, tell us what you're doing.
So next Tuesday, the 13th of September, we are at Rainbow Families Council taking about five families up to Parliament House in Canberra to meet another 10 or so families from New South Wales and the ACT. We are going there to give parliamentarians a very simple message. For the sake of our kids, please no plebiscite. We are really adamant that the plebiscite will completely detrimentally affect the mental health and well-being of our children, never mind trans and gender diverse children or young LGBTI people as well. But particularly we think that our children have a unique voice. So we are taking our children specifically to talk directly to our elected representatives and to say we think the plebiscite is a bad idea. And we're quite hopeful that we can make a quite active and loud, I mean, with children running around, it's always a bit loud, voice.
Yeah.
And that we really are quite hopeful that we can make an impact. So that's an exciting thing for next week. It's going to be a very long trip up there and be very tiring, but we'll just promise lots of screen time, I think.
As tired as you are, we're going to give you a call next Tuesday and we'll try and catch up and find out what's been happening. Thanks very much, Felicity, for joining us on The Informer.
Ro Allen was last year appointed Victoria's first Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, and she is in that role to champion the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans and gender diverse and intersex Victorians within the government. Ms Allen is an effective, experienced, long-standing advocate for LGBTI Victorians and has held a number of leadership positions in the community and in government sectors. She's been a member of three Victorian LGBTI ministerial advisory groups. She's also chaired the Ministerial Advisory Committee on LGBTI Health and Wellbeing between 2007 and 2009, and it's great to have her in the studio. Welcome, Ro.
Thanks, Paul. I think that bio is a bit long. It's probably longer than my interview.
It is possibly longer. Look, we could talk about an awful lot of things, Ro, and it's a privilege to have you here tonight at Joy 94.9 on The Informer. We've been talking to Felicity Marlowe about the great new act, the Adoption Amendment Act for same-sex couples, which came into effect last Thursday. It's funny because it's been 12 years in the coming, and she's an amazing advocate for law reform in this area.
Yeah, it certainly has paid off. And Felicity, many of the Rainbow Family Council, but particularly Felicity, has been there from the beginning and agitated on all sides of government to get this finally through. And it was election commitment, and there was certainly a wasn't a dry eye in the place when we got the bill through, because it's 12 years, but we're there now.
Now, look, I know you just passed in the corridor. Unfortunately, we couldn't get these times together to have you both in the studio at the same time. But Felicity did mention a couple of small things that still need to be worked out. One of the things was about surrogacy, same-sex adoption in surrogacy, and what's going to happen there?
So there's no discrimination in relation to surrogacy. Surrogacy, at the end of the day, is going to be a federal issue. So we're in the same boat as heterosexual couples with surrogacy and overseas surrogacy. And I think the issue really now in Victoria is it's untested in the courts. And so it's hard to give advice about what will happen. And, of course, nobody wants their family to be the test case in any of this.
No.
What the Victorian government has done is committed to support gay dads and surrogate families all the way to what is under the responsibility of the Victorian government. But there will be a point where surrogacy laws sit firmly with the federal government, and we won't be able to do anything around that. So, yes, these laws are terrific, and all the discrimination between us and heterosexual families has been eliminated with this, but it doesn't actually solve the whole surrogacy issue, which, as you can understand, is incredibly complex. Everyone's paperwork is different. Children have come from different countries, and there's all sorts of different issues with that, but firmly sits in the federal space.
There will be possibly test cases, either in Victorian or in family court under a federal jurisdiction.
Yeah, and we will be providing some resources from the department, the Victorian Department of Human Services, to assist families work through what Victoria can support them with up to a point.
Okay, well, that's quite interesting that you're going to work cooperatively with LGBT couples who may need to take that road.
That's right.
Okay.
And we just don't know, and unfortunately, we don't know the mind of the courts, and we don't know what that road's going to look like. And that's not a nice place to be in, but we're there together.
Felicity also brought up a concern about faith-based adoption agencies having an exemption. Was that purposeful for any particular reason?
Well, the original bill certainly didn't give them the exemption, but that was an amendment done in the upper house by the opposition, and that bill went through. So we still, basically what that means is churches can still have religious exemption from not supporting. There is only one faith-based organisation out of the four organisations that will choose to do that. And they've agreed to refer same-sex families to the other three, which are statewide. So, you know, there's a workaround so that no family in Victoria will be any worse off. It's not ideal. You'd like to go into any door and get any help. Three out of four, some would say, is not bad. It's not great. There's obviously more work to do around churches and their exemption under the Equal Opportunity Act, but that's not what this bill covers. So, you know, rainbow families in Victoria can adopt. There's no question about that. There's three out of four current organisations that will be able to assist them. So I certainly met a lesbian couple who have two children on permanent orders. For those kids, being able to turn that into an adoption down the track gives them a lot of security, not just like when they're after they're 18, but for inheritance and for different things. It's really going to make a difference for that family, it regardless is, yeah. of biology. You know, it's fantastic.
And also for foster carers, that will make a big difference as well. We've discussed that already tonight. Was that the intention of the Act as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it mostly be in the foster care space or adopting a child from another biological parent as a second parent. Because there are, you know, there aren't very, very few adoptions, unknown adoptions in Victoria now. Only about 12 a year. So most of the adoptions are known to people, so they're foster care or they're adopting a stepchild or something like that. So that's really important for people to know too. There's not like all of a sudden there's a window of, you know, thousands of children that need to be adopted. Mm. Yeah, that's a very small number these days.
What else is on the books, Ro? We can tick this one now. What else is on the books? Do you want to give us a little preview?
We have the Birth, Deaths and Marriages Bill that's had its second reading. You can get me back to talk about that when we get a bit further down the track. But, you know, there's an agenda of reform in Victoria and we'll see more things roll out. But we're certainly getting on the right side of history.
Well, thank you very much, Ro. Thanks for coming in and having a chat to us about this groundbreaking new law that will make a lot of children very happy. So thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, David.
We're joined now by Senior Constable Janie Lambert and the President of Dykes on Bikes, Joe Bangles. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
Thank you.
Look, firstly to you, Janie, there's been a spike in motorcycle fatalities this year. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's been a real concern for police. Pretty much one in five road deaths this year have been motorcyclists. And pretty much from this year, motorcyclists have never been that higher a percentage. And certainly a total of 41 of the 204 lives lost this year in 2016 have been motorcyclists from Victoria Police figures.
Can you attribute this to anything in particular?
Look, it's really hard to say. Look, it's fairly seasonal sometimes with the weather over winter, with the road changing conditions. They're more wet, maybe more inexperienced riders out there. It's really hard to put a finger on it. But I always usually say, look, with TAC now, they're trying to make sure that motorcyclists have more training, maybe 3 days a week rather than the two-day course that they had in the past. And just getting rider awareness out there, not just for the riders but for the car drivers as well.
Yeah. Joe, if you could give any advice to other motorcyclists, what would that be?
Definitely spend more time on the road. I definitely agree with what Janie said there. Like, as far as inexperienced riders and stuff, like, I believe that the rider course should have a lot more hours in it before they get their ticket and just put out on the road.
Yeah, look, I'm a motorbike rider as well. And, there's nobody is actually right when there's an accident with a motorcyclist, because you don't have to prove that you're right as a motorcyclist, because you're going to come off second best. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of mentality out there with the drivers, you know. If you've got a big rig, and that can even just be a small car, it's still definitely bigger than a bike. You're always going to come off second best, and you know, like with being a motorcycle rider, you're too busy concentrating just actually riding and not quite aware of what's happening around you, and you're surrounded by bigger vehicles all the time. So
true. We're certainly not texting at the same time. Janie, if you could give any advice to another driver, what would that be?
Yeah, look, certainly mainly for the road users in vehicles is certainly doing your mirror checks and shoulder checks. Obviously, motorcyclists have less in your line of sight that you can actually see. And I know we always tell motorcyclists to wear, you know, visible clothing, you know, to certainly look out for other vehicles, because they are going to certainly be worse off in an accident. But certainly for the road users, just to be aware, do their shoulder checks, mirror checks, and just always, check there could be motorcyclists in their blind spot.
Look, back to you, Joe. Dykes on Bikes is well known for leading the Pride March here in Melbourne, but they do a lot more than that, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. One of our main goals in our club is also fundraising. We have a big event coming up in November, which is a fundraiser for Switchboard. And over the years, we've been around 5 years now, we've raised thousands of dollars for different LGBTIQ communities around Melbourne. So that's pretty much what we do. We ride bikes and raise money and lead Pride March.
there's actually chapters all around the world, but you're saying that Melbourne has been around for 5 years, which is fantastic. There's a lot of socialising, and also it breaks down isolation, doesn't it, for riders and non-riders?
Yeah, absolutely. We have members from all different backgrounds, and our one main interest is our bikes, and we get together on a monthly basis and, you know, have a meet and greet cafe ride, which anyone is welcome to. The next one's coming up on the 8th of October in Middle Park. You can jump on our website and find out all about that. But the social aspect of our club is huge, and it's the bikes that brings us together.
Okay, look, it's great talking to you both tonight, Janie and Joe. We'll put some links onto our podcast as well so you can follow those and see what's happening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to tonight's guests, Felicity Marlowe from the Rainbow Families Council, Ro Allen, Victoria's Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, Senior Constable Janie Lambert, and also Joe Bangles, President of the Dykes on Bikes in Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.